south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, back in the saddle again, and live, or kind of live anyway, and coming at you right off the heels of my latest Expat Insider Seminar. Oh, and just a fantastic group of people. I mean, really fantastic. Lots of brain power. Many big foreheads, you know? Plenty of laughs, too. Way too many laughs. What's it they say? All brain power and no laughs makes Jack a dull boy? Well, something like that. And I have to say, as the group landed in Guatemala, that's where we had seminar, they came in at various times, some of them quite a few days early. And I started meeting them, I realized, hell, most of them are smarter than I am. In fact, that's how I started my intro at the Saturday night meet and greet. I said, don't you just hate that when you're surrounded by people who are smarter than you are? And you know me, I always say, if you're going to get it in business here in Latin America, you want your competition to be Latins, not gringos and gringas. And man, I'll tell you, I wouldn't want to be in business competition with any one of the people that came down. And wow, did we have some great discussions and some visits from former attendees to the seminar. You know, a lot of them are living down here now. And they do pop into various seminar events to add their little bits of advice and such. For example, Bitcoin Dan came in a couple of times and gave everyone within earshot a quick and dramatic explanation of why he thinks Bitcoin has a good 10 years yet to run. And he says with pretty good confidence, he thinks it could go up another 10 times. And Ethereum, of course, everybody's asking about Ethereum. He says he thinks it's only got about 3 years to run. And it, like so many of the other cryptocurrencies, is being dragged along by the frenzy. And as he explained to many of the attendees, it has a fatal flaw. Yes, he says Ethereum has a fatal flaw, but people won't find out about it for a couple of years. Even though, for now, he says it still has a huge upside, but has a fatal flaw. I thought I'd throw that out at you for all the emails I get on the Bitcoin and cryptocurrency subject. Oh, he said Bitcoin has a fatal flaw too, but it'll run much longer than the rest of the cryptocurrencies because it's kind of like the mothership and the backbone on which all other cryptocurrencies are built. He says the problem you'll see with Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies is when they're finally towards the end of their mining capabilities. That would be 22 or 23 million Bitcoins. That's the limit, remember? He says as you get towards that limit, the miners' rewards, that is the money they receive versus the amount of energy and computing power they have to use to get a Bitcoin, will become less and less. And that's when the real problems will start. But by then, there'll be lots of new cryptocurrencies around that will have solved the major flaws. So why do we care at all about what Bitcoin Dan has to say? I mean, there's all kinds of supposed cryptocurrency guru types on the internet, meaning there's absolutely no shortage of opinions or predictions. And for those of you who've been keeping up with the progress of cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, Litecoin, Ethereum, three big ones, if you've been listening to the usual financial analysts on mainstream media, you've heard them say Bitcoin and the cryptocurrencies were a flash in the pan. They should have died a long time ago. They were doomed. And truthfully, for the average person, it is a complicated subject. So I just listen to experts like Dan. But why Dan? What makes him stand out from the rest of the pundits? Well, Dan happens to be the very first person in the world to teach a cryptocurrency course at a university. And that was about 3 or 4 years ago now. He's still doing it too. Plus, he's in the process of building his own cryptocurrency right now that he says addresses all the problems that Bitcoin and Ethereum have. Let you know how that goes, too. By the way, Dan always says when he doesn't know something, he defers to his smarter brother. Yep, Dan has what he calls a smarter brother. Anyway, enough about that, except to say, man, we had a great time. Oh, and our special guest, Robert, he spoke for an hour and a half on the subject of how to make money on the internet from anywhere in the world. And of course, there are thousands of supposed internet gurus out there blathering away on the same sort of subject in the blogosphere. However, Robert, he's something special, really unique. He's personally generated over $100 million in revenue using Google Ads. And believe me, the seminar attendees were absolutely riveted with his presentation and what he had to say. And I'll tell you, that old cliche, you had to be there, well, you really had to be there. Too bad you weren't. Meanwhile, right after the seminar ended, I checked my emails and I had 78 inquiries wondering when I'm going to have my next seminar. Of course, I could never do a seminar with that many people. It'd be crazy. I always limit the seminars to 25 people or less. And of course, most people who send emails are just tire kickers anyway. Oh, they have the best of intentions, all right, and that's a good thing. At least they're interested in getting on board with their own plan B. But addressing this subject of having another seminar, I always say it depends on conditions. There are critical tipping points and dominoes that are ready to fall that could make it very difficult, even impossible, for people to come on down. In fact, I've been hearing some disturbing news coming from attendees at this seminar concerning what Big Brother's been up to lately where you come from. Now, this I didn't know, and I'm sure most of you didn't either. For the longest time, as far back as I can remember, if you were traveling outside the States, the expiration date on your passport had to be no less than 6 months from the date you were leaving. In other words, a normal U.S. passport is valid for 10 years, and you can travel out of the country for the first 9.5 years. And during that last 6 months, the passport was useless. You weren't allowed to travel outside the country on it. But now I understand just recently it's been changed to 1 year, so you're not allowed to travel outside the country unless your passport has more than a year left on its validity period. Now, that can be a real problem, but you'll find out next time you try to buy an airline ticket. Because to do that, you know, you have to give them your passport info, right? So now, in that respect, you've got Big Brother tightening the screws just a little bit more, making it slightly more difficult to leave the country, which makes you wonder why they say a U.S. passport's good for 10 years. It's not. It's only 9. And I understand, I've got a couple articles to prove this, they're thinking about shortening the U.S. passport renewal period from 10 to 5 years. Obviously to squeeze more dough out of you and keep better track of the cows that temporarily leave the barn. Oh, and speaking about Big Brother tightening the screws even more, have you heard about Senate Bill 1241? Introduced by corrupt pinhead senator from California, Dianne Feinstein? Now, this is a tragedy, and you can see by the wording, it's got two purposes. Number one, it's meant to make you think twice about leaving the country, even for a short vacation, and it's meant to try to kill cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and Ethereum. But it won't because they're not centralized or controlled by any one entity or one government. And it's obvious when you see governments trying to pass legislation like this that they're absolutely scared to death of cryptocurrency. And I believe the American public should be absolutely scared to death about this legislation. Listen to this. They call it a new and improved money laundering bill, Senate Bill 1241, that requires anyone traveling beyond U.S. borders to declare his assets in writing and in detail, plus provide ongoing access to all accounts owned or operated by the individual. In essence, it's providing Big Brother postulant governments with a license to track your cash, cryptocurrencies, and other assets in perpetuity. And should at any point your declaration come into question as to its accuracy, as your movements and actions may be beyond what the postulant government deems normal, reasonable, or customary for your stated financial condition, the entirety of those assets could be seized. Not just those assets you may have forgotten to list or went unreported, but all of your assets. In addition, you'll face prison sentences up to 5 years. By the way, I looked up that bill and it's been amended a bit, changed to 10 years in prison. So this bill will put pressure on people not to travel outside the U.S. Yes, it will complicate things immensely for international travelers. What they're trying to do is make it difficult, if not impossible, for U.S. citizens to escape Big Brother. So what we're looking at in the near future is arbitrary confiscation. Now, of course, confiscation of money and assets without a warrant by state and federal officials is nothing new. I'm sure you've heard the stories about state and federal cops pulling over people who've got cash in their cars and, well, they just take it. In fact, I believe the amount of money confiscated by the police just last year is over $3.5 billion. And it's done without a warrant and without a person committing a crime. You knew that already, right? Which is a signal to all you guys and gals out there who have not got your plan B going, who are not in the process of getting some, if not all, of your assets out of the country. You're about to feel the heavy hammer of Uncle Sam. You're about to get screwed. So, as with all new laws, it'll take some time for this to play out. Now, when this law passes, and everyone seems to think it will, after all, there's money laundering right in its name. And the word terrorist, too. Double whammy, right? That always signals a shoo-in for any congressional bill. After all, it would be political suicide to vote against an anti-narco/terrorism bill. That's what it's being advertised as. So what's that mean? Well, if you're just thinking about a plan B and haven't actually worked it out yet, if you haven't got some cash or assets outside the country, if you're an irritant to the U.S. government and they want to pick on you, could be you're on an alphabet agency list or 10, or maybe you just didn't think it was any of the government's business to divulge certain assets. For whatever reason, now the government can tag you. If so, all your U.S. assets can be confiscated and you wouldn't have a dime to pay a lawyer. Senate Bill 1241 has a long name, but the short name that they're using now, they call it the Money Laundering, Terrorist Financing, and Counterfeiting Act of 2017. Now, what politician would vote against that? And as with all laws, it'll take a little while for them to phase it in until they get it up to speed, and so it'll probably play out like this. They'll have some asset confiscations at a local level. They'll go for people at random, but they'll target specific individuals that they know of for personal reasons or because they feel the booty will be substantial. We'll all read about it in the papers and it'll scare the hell out of us. By the way, we're talking here about booty in the traditional sense, you know, as in pirate booty, not booty in the rap or hip-hop sense. Just a clarification there for you millennials. And naturally, Senate Bill 1241 will have a national database, which authorities can review possible targets based on their assets and political and social affiliations, which will give them a legal opportunity to go after people who behave in a manner deemed unacceptable to the present authorities and asswipes in power. So naturally, they'll go after people who have appeared on certain lists. How many lists are you on? You download edgy stuff and you listen to alternative radio, etc., so you're on a lot of lists, believe me. Have you a gun or two? Have you been prepping a bit? You're on some lists. What you been tweeting lately? Well, you know the drill. Hey, sounds a lot like the old Soviet Union, doesn't it? Isn't it funny? The more Russia becomes like the U.S., the more the U.S. becomes like the old Soviet Union. Who could have predicted that? Well, George Orwell did. To summarize this, if you're going to leave the country for any reason, the bill says you're required to provide a detailed report of your wealth, no matter how small. And if the regulatory body that reviews this stuff regards your report as in error or incomplete, the law allows them to confiscate all of your assets, including the portions that were correctly reported. Now, as one Senate observer reports, the beauty of this system is that it need not be enforced too often at all. Once people understand that at any moment, the government could take everything, and the citizens learn they have no recourse whatsoever. They learn to keep their heads down, be compliant, and don't want to take the chance of traveling outside U.S. borders and possibly making some incorrect statement when they report their assets that could change their life forever. So it's safe to say that this new bill will scare a lot of people away from wanting to move out of the States. In fact, many have predicted it'll be a boon to the local internal USA travel industry and kill foreign travel to the usual vacation destinations. Obviously, malignant government thieves want to keep the cows in the barn. Effectively, it's like keeping all Americans under house arrest with a 24/7 ankle bracelet. You okay with that? By the way, how's your plan B coming? Hey, this is not old news. The last revision of the bill was May 25th, 2017. But it's leaking out now. In fact, we weren't discussing this at the seminar just a week ago. But I know if we'd have heard about it, where the discussion would have led. It would have led to extended talks about renouncing U.S. citizenship. I'm sure of that. Why? Well, that's because for some, it's definitely one option out of this mess. Though that comes at a huge cost, financially and socially. But you can predict when this information is disseminated, there'll be a huge spike in people renouncing. By the way, there were at least two people at the seminar that took me aside and said, "Hey, Johnny, now that I've got a second or even third legal passport, I'm gonna renounce." So yeah, that's one way to avoid what's going on up in the States. Just remember, you do have to have a second passport to do that. Or you'll be a stateless person, an illegal alien. Sounds bad, but I hear up in the States, if you're an illegal alien, you can qualify for over 80 government programs. And I hear it's a pretty good deal to be an illegal alien in Europe these days, too. As soon as you're in, you get a big cash resettlement payout, a couple of thousand euros. But I digress as usual. Now, as one financial analyst commented after reading this bill, he said, unfortunately, the coming global economic crisis will only make the bankrupt U.S. government a bigger, scarier, and more aggressive thief. Then, he says, if you haven't taken steps to protect your money by now, it's almost too late. And my recommendations? Well, you've heard them before. Owning foreign real estate, a foreign business, or having dough in a foreign bank account, as long as that bank account does not have a branch in the U.S., if you have gold or silver out of the country in a foreign jurisdiction, or cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, Litecoin, Ethereum, hopefully you've been doing some of that, or at least getting your ducks lined up. In most cases, those assets are completely out of Big Brother's reach, no matter what happens up in the States. By the way, if you're working on your Plan B, just getting your ducks lined up right now, the next best thing to coming down here and getting boots on the ground yourself is to sign up for my Expat Essentials course. Just go to www.expatplanb.com and you'll see exactly what I mean. And of course, there's a money-back guarantee. Oh, and for you listeners who need a little personal help with your Plan B, you can set up a half an hour or hour phone or Skype consult with me. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com and download my phone consult questionnaire form. Have a look at it. There's probably a few things on that list you haven't thought about yet. All right, where were we? Oh, yeah. So then, why is it so difficult for the U.S. government to seize, block, or embargo any assets you have outside the country? First of all, they'd have to go to court in the States and get a judgment against you. That's easy, right? It's the government. Then they'd have to send lawyers down to your Latin country where they know you have assets. And how are they going to know that? Well, you'd have to tell them now, wouldn't you? Because, you know, the U.S. has no access to, let's say, real estate or municipal archives in Latin countries. So they'll need to get a judgment in the U.S. court, easy to get. Then they'll have to go down to Latin America. It's all in Spanish, you know. They'll have to send lawyers down, go to a Latin court, which is not enough to get a judgment. They have to hire local Latin lawyers to do the proceedings. It doesn't matter how good or slick or how many cases a maggot lawyer in the States has won, he can never prosecute a case here in Latin America unless he passes the bar exam here in Spanish. Bottom line, for the U.S. government to go through all that, you'd have to be a really big fish. Like, for example, a high-profile narco case. Meanwhile, if your assets are up in the States, you're a cow to be milked 24/7 and you know it. So the point is, you've got to get some assets out of the U.S. while you still can. Now, as the man said in the previous segment, if you haven't taken steps to get some assets out of the country, it might already be too late. Now, I think for many, it would be very difficult to get all of your assets out of the country and into a foreign jurisdiction, but you got to try to get some of them out of the U.S. It's easy to see where this is going, and it's not good. And about renouncing your citizenship, I'm not advising you to do that. However, if you try it, you'll find it's a lot like a divorce, rarely nice and sweet, and you almost never remain friends. Like one expat told me, a guy who renounced his citizenship just recently, he said, when you renounce your citizenship, when you divorce the U.S. government, they want alimony too, and they want it all. No monthly installments, right up front. By the way, talking about U.S. government or any other first world government, going to court in Latin America to get a judgment against a U.S. citizen. Well, I can tell you this, I've been down here 27 years now and I've never, ever known that happen to a gringo. Unless he was a big-time narco or into something disgusting like distribution of kiddie porn. So then you have to wonder, why is that? Why doesn't the United States go after, for example, U.S. citizens or residents who have evaded taxes to the tune of six, even seven figures? Well, here's the loophole. That's because in order for a foreign court to hear your case, it has to be a crime in that country too. For example, suppose a U.S. citizen made millions in a foreign country, and he has not reported that to the U.S. tax authorities, and they find out and make a huge assessment against him. Still, they won't go down to that Latin country and try to take him to court or have him extradited from there. Because in nearly all Latin countries, except a very few like Colombia and Brazil, you are not required to report your foreign income. You're not taxed on it. So what's illegal in the States is perfectly legal in most of Latin America. Therefore, not a crime. So Latin courts won't hear the case. For example, gambling, prostitution, and insider trading are completely legal throughout Latin America. However, totally illegal in the States. Unless you're a high-level government pus bag, and then you get an unofficial pass. I mean, come on. How is it that so many senators and representatives go in as salt of the earth, humble, middle-class people like Bernie Sanders, and end up with seats on the board of directors of Fortune 500 companies for which they have absolutely no talent or expertise? Not to mention, they always seem to walk out of office with huge bank accounts and three or four houses worth a couple of million dollars each. But I digress as usual. Where were we? Oh, yeah. So even though you can't be prosecuted or extradited for a crime committed up in the States, that is not a crime here in Latin America, the U.S. can still block your passport. And they can do that for pretty much any reason. So it goes without saying you really should get a second Latin passport. Just a couple of final comments about the seminar. Right after it was over, on the final night we call the Last Supper, one of the attendees walked up to me and said, "You know, Johnny, I've never been anywhere in Latin America except a couple of times in Mexico. Being south of the border," that's what I call it, south of the border is south of Mexico. He said, "Johnny, I got this strange feeling. I think I had it before, like 30 or so years ago. And I think that feeling is happiness. These Latin people," he said, "are smiling all the time. They're really polite and happy." He said, "I've had a heart attack and a couple of stents. I'm on a treadmill and I'm not happy. I want some of that Latin happiness to rub off on me." And I said, "You know, that happens a lot." Now, you longtime listeners have heard me talk about the blue-eyed syndrome. Latins think that's just kind of a gift from heaven, because blue, gray, and green eyes just do not occur naturally in Latins unless they've had a heavy dose of Anglo-Gringo or European blood. Like, for example, in that 0.1% of the stuck-up, classist, racist Latin elite that keep those bloodlines pure. You may have heard me mention that occasionally I'll be in an elevator, and I'm off the gringo tourist trail, so Latinas and Latinos don't think I can speak any Spanish. I'll eavesdrop. That's fun. And I've heard references to my own blue eyes dozens of times. Why? Because natural, light-colored eyes and light hair pop up only maybe 1 in 1,000 people. In fact, if you look at Shakira, probably the most famous female singer coming out of Latin America, you'll notice she's got pure brown eyes, but blonde hair. She's a bottle blonde because, according to the laws of genetics, there's no chance you can have real, natural blonde hair and have brown eyes. Now, you'll notice if you go to a high-end mall anywhere in Latin America, you'll see a lot of ladies with blonde hair. Some even light-skinned and tall. They sometimes look like gringas. That is, till they speak, and you'll notice Spanish is their first language. And if they speak English, it's with a heavy Spanish accent. Now, if you're fooled by the light-colored or blonde hair, have a look at the eyes. Notice that they're always nearly brown or black. That means their hair has had a blonde dye or tint job. Yep, I've talked to a few beauticians. They say at one time or another, every Latin lady has her hair tinted a lighter color or blonde. Or they have it streaked. Mecha, as they're called. That would be blonde streaks in the hair. And you know, it's a big thing down here for ladies to buy contact lenses that are blue or green tinted. They never look quite natural. They're kind of startling sometimes. Latin people, especially the ladies, are so obsessed with blue eyes that if you have them, they'll compliment you, a perfect stranger. Or, like I said, talk about your eyes amongst themselves in the elevator. In fact, get this. One of my translator ladies for my expat insider seminar, she told me that she noticed one of our attendees had very blue eyes, and she went up to him and said, "I really love your blue eyes." And then, not so convinced, she blurted out, "Those are colored contacts, aren't they?" Since we're way off the gringo tourist trail, most anyone she sees with blue eyes has colored contacts. So for a second, she thought he was pulling a fast one, maybe to impress the ladies, who knows. And of course, no gringo would ever think to do such a thing. The fact is, and it's sad to say, most gringo men don't pay attention to that kind of stuff. However, it's a huge deal here in Latin America. It seems that most Latinas have been through the colored contact phase, so they naturally think, well, does he or doesn't he? Meanwhile, I know up in the States, Chicago at least, I didn't even know there was such a thing as colored contacts, though maybe I wasn't paying attention. So again, Latinos and Latinas are attracted to features that are rare within their own communities. You know, tall, blonde, blue eyes, green eyes. By the way, if you've got blue, green, gray eyes, they're all grouped together and called ojos claros, which means clear eyes. So if you've got clear eyes, that's green, blue, or gray. You're tall. Anything over 5'6" is considered tall for a man anyway. You will get noticed and get a lot of extra attention. And that goes double for gringas. Oh, and another thing. Blonde hair is perceived differently by Latins than it is for us. If it's white, yellow, or sandy looking, we call that blonde. However, Latins are very, very generous in the use of the term blonde. There are actually a couple of words for it. One is rubia, and one's canche. Now, as for me, I have dark brown hair. I'm not blonde, but when I walk through the market, when someone's pitching a product, they'll say, canche, canche, check this out, canche, means blondie. Now, by no means would I ever qualify as a blonde person up in the States. However, here in Latin America, 999 out of 1,000 people have either black or nearly black hair. So again, Latins are attracted to what's very rare in their own culture. On the other hand, the vast majority of gringos and gringas down here in Latin America are attracted to what you might call the typical Latin look. Long, dark hair, very brown or black eyes, morena or moreno skin color, that would be like honey colored. You know, the kind of traits and features that are rare in middle-class Anglo-America. Now, said about that. Before I forget, I have to mention, as far as my seminar group, man, the wheels were turning and they were popping out business ideas like crazy. Again, all the best ideas come from boots on the ground. I doubt you can have any real moments of Latin American business brilliance sitting on a pot up in Cleveland. How about this great idea? One lady said, you know, Johnny, we're going to all these restaurants and I noticed almost all of them have their menus in Spanish. And of course, you provided us with some translations, which helped a lot. Well, this lady said, you know, I have an idea. What if one was to make a job of going around all the restaurants? You pick up a menu. They'll always be in Spanish, especially when you're off the Gringo Tourist Trail. Scan the menu into your computer. Erase the description of the food items in Spanish in Photoshop and replace those letters and words in English. In other words, translate the menus without changing the appearance of the food or the layout and design of the menu at all. And I said, you know what? That's a great idea. I'm sure every restaurant would want that because gringos do pop in once in a while, even when you're way off the Gringo Tourist Trail. Plus, to have a menu in English in Latin America, that's considered class. So to do the job for each menu, an hour or two on the computer, maybe 3 or 4 hours for a very extended menu. And I'm sure almost any owner of a decent restaurant anywhere in Latin America would pay $50 or $100 for that. And it'd be in perfect American English too. In fact, you wouldn't believe how many menus, even on the Gringo Tourist Trail, are loaded with poor phrasing and typos. And you know what? There are so many towns and cities and so many restaurants, you'd have an unlimited supply of work. So how about that for an idea? You might even shock the boss by walking in with a sample page already done of their own menu.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my 3 videos. See ya. Nos vemos.